Back together again, you and I, on a frosty and icy Tuesday, January 16th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. We open with news that a controversial electric vehicle mandate might be resurrected in the next few weeks. Former Time magazine reporter Alan Sanders analyzed the previous night's Iowa GOP caucus results, while Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio talked about continuing efforts to get rid of the municipal property taxes on motor vehicles around the state.
So I get out of bed this morning and I'm looking at my phone and checking in on the computer, and I'm saying to myself, well, okay, the majority of the show today is going to be, the dust clearing from the Iowa caucuses and a big win for Donald Trump last tonight. And, you know, was it a convincing enough win? And what are Nikki Haley going to do? And what's Ron DeSantis going to do? And predictably, Vivek Ramaswamy finally dropped out. So he's gone and he can yell and scream somewhere else. And I said, well, this is going to be the majority of the show today. But no. Oh, no. So about an hour after that, after I figured I'd be live today from the Bedroom Broadcast Center because of the weather, my phone starts to blow up and I start getting these messages. And my sources up in Hartford, and I've got some pretty reliable ones in any given day. I've got two or three sets of eyes in the Capitol giving me the high sign about stuff that you've got to know about, because the majority Democratic leadership up there, they try to do stuff and they don't like when they lose. And remember, I told you that they're not going to be happy because they lost on tolls and they lost on the Transportation Climate Initiative, right? And they thought they had a slam dunk on this phase out of the sales of new gasoline-powered vehicles starting here in Connecticut in three model years in 2027. Because we're in 2024 now, and before you know it, the 2025 is going to be on the lots in a few months, July, August, September, whatever. And what did I say to you? What did your old Uncle Paulie say to you, right? This is going to come back because the fact that two Democrats, at least two, Kathy Austin and Joan Hartley, split on the Regulations Review Committee, and they said, no, we're not going to do this after hearing from constituents. You see, the leadership in Hartford, they don't like when constituents, how dare the great unwashed not love what we're doing? They don't like when the constituents say, listen, we don't like the plan. We don't like this plan or that plan. No, we don't want tolls. No, we don't trust you with any increased money on the Transportation Climate Initiative. We don't trust you. And no, we don't want you to tell us that at X date we're going to be able to stop buying gasoline-powered cars, because you have not given us a plan, a concrete plan. Dots, I's dotted, T's crossed as to where all these extra charging stations are going to be. Is it going to be near one, one at my house and near my business? And what's the deal with that? So they don't like that. So I get and I'm going to read you some of the stuff I am hearing. So you need to pay attention to this. Now, this is all going to start shaking out in a little less than 2 weeks. In a little less than 2 weeks, this will start shaking out again. Now, we have the regular legislative session that is coming up this year. Now, remember, and there is a session every year, 1 year and the odd year and the even year. 1 year, it's generally short. 1 year, it's generally long. And in the even years, the fine men and women that run our great state, 36 men and women in the state Senate and 151 in the House, they are also up for election or re-election, if you prefer. So you can take, I'm not telling you how to vote, wink, wink, but I am telling you to pay attention to this, which, again, may or may not happen. But I am hearing, now here's the skinny that I have been told. From a couple of my sources who I checked in with, and they all kind of said, yeah, we're hearing the same thing. There is a buzz at the Capitol about a possible, this is not set in stone yet, but I am being told, and I'm relying on these people because they're usually right, and I'm playing the percentages here. We are looking at possibly a very short special session of the legislature, I have been told, perhaps 2 weeks from today or tomorrow or both days. January 30th and or January 31st. For what would amount to be an up or down vote on a new bill that, again, would mandate the phase out of the sale of new, in other words, cars from the dealership. You would not. Now, I haven't seen the particulars of the specific bill, and I'll get to one caveat in there in a moment. But just to let you know, apparently there's going to be a quick session, a quickie, if you will, January 30th and 31st. I've been told there's a good chance that'll happen. That would reinstitute this ban eventually on the sale of new gasoline-powered vehicles by the 2035 model year. Now, under the previous auspices of this bill, or this agreement that still links us with California, that would start with the 2027 model year, which is only three model years away. I don't know, honestly, up front, just to let you know about that. I don't know whether that is still in effect or not. So again, none of this is written in stone yet. We'll see how the media picks this up in the state. But what I am hearing, and I was given the high sign on this by three people earlier today, who said, hey, this is probably happening at the end of the month. Now, the caveats, there's some caveats here. And again, I want you to listen to this and decide whether or not you should respectfully, and I stress this like crazy, respectfully, contact your legislator, as you did previously with this, and also with the Transportation Climate Initiative, and also with the tolls. You contact your legislator and say, okay, here's how I feel, and I will be watching you. That's it. Now, maybe you approve of this plan. That's fine. But if you don't, you must let every member, or particularly the state House member or the state Senate member in your district, if you don't know who those are, you have to tell them, hey, okay, we hear this is happening. Is this happening? And again, don't yell and scream. Don't use epithets. Please keep the language clean. Say, all right, I'm going to be watching this because I know you're up for re-election this November, along with all members of the state House and state Senate. Now, a couple of caveats here. Number one, I have heard from one source that the way they're structuring this is there will be no public input. Now, that might not be true, but if they do this in a special session, I've been told by a couple of people there's a way they could possibly do this without getting any further public input on this. Okay, maybe yes, maybe no. We'll see. I could be wrong, but keep that in mind. The second thing is here, and this is important, I guess the way this is going to be sold, and I've heard this from a source of mine, is not completely unexpected. There are some states who have done this, who have said, yes, by X date, we want to stop the dealership sales of new gasoline-powered vehicles. You could still buy a used car. Among friends or family members, you could sell a car, but from a dealership, no. So what they probably will try and sell you and I on this, or the way this will be sold, will likely be what some states are doing with benchmarks. So again, there may be saying that, okay, we enact this now on whatever day we sign it in 2024. We will then reassess this in 2026. Now, that sounds good. But believe me, you have lawyers legislating and lawyers writing stuff that lawyers have legislated. So you could write in any caveat of caveats that could render anything you think that's codified in law moot. So again, this is what I'm hearing. The 30th or 31st, possibly at the end of this month or a little sooner or a little later before the regular session starts, that may look to resurrect this. And I've also been told by somebody that the governor and Democrats are desperate for some sort of win on climate. They're not happy that tolls were defeated. They're not happy that the Transportation Climate Initiative was defeated. They're not happy that this was defeated the first time around. So again, pay attention to this. Again, special session would be needed. There likely, I'm told, would not be a public hearing on this or public input. They will likely formulate the legislation to be done in steps, which other states have done. And the other interesting thing I have been told on this is that to get some Black and Hispanic legislators on board with this, because remember, there was pushback on this a few months ago from folks in some economically depressed areas of the state saying, hey, 3, 4, 5, 10 years out from now, I have quite properly, there were some legislators, some of the Black and Hispanic legislators in Hartford saying, hey, I've got constituents here who can't afford, you know, at least at this time what these cars cost, $35,000, $40,000, $45,000, $50,000. There may be, I'm told, be some sweeteners in that bill. One thing that was floated to me, increased energy assistance, which we should be doing anyway, because we have leftover money and you have people who are worried about, you know, continuing to heat their homes for the rest of whatever cold weather we have, and then you have the sweltering days of summer. So that is where it is. So again, it's not a complete surprise, because I told you these things never, ever, ever go away. They will try the Transportation Climate Initiative again. They will try tolls again. But listen, you don't have to, when you scream and yell, nobody hears you. You know, they don't hear you. All they hear you is screaming and yelling. It's like when I say, well, when terrorists blow up things, you don't really hear what the terrorist grievances are. You see destroyed buildings and dead people. So that is why I say you can be upset with this. You can be angry, but be civil. Call your state rep's office. Send them a nicely worded business-like email. Tell them if you don't like this idea, maybe you do, maybe you completely disagree with me. And again, let me just say, I have nothing intrinsically wrong or nothing intrinsically against electric vehicles. If you're going to do this and maybe do it with benchmarks, which might be the way to go, what are those benchmarks going to tell me? I want to see specific plans, crossed T's, dotted I's, and all that. I want to see a plan that's, by this date, we will have put this much money into Connecticut's power grid. By this date, X amount of streets in the state will have had their local grids, their feeder lines, and their transformers, per se, upgraded. So if 10 people are charging a car at once, which puts a big strain on the circuits there, that's not me saying it, that's electrical engineers, you know, we will have prepared for that. Let's not let the people who consider these environmental laws as sacrament, as gospel, let's not let them blur the lines between the fact that these things affect people. And the big thing you need to do, folks, is pay attention. So again, just to summarize, we'll get to some other stuff later on, but if you'd like to chime in on this, please do 203-333-9422-333-WICC. I hear from some sources that there are plans now for a possible special session coming up in the next 2 weeks plus or minus a few days that would bring back this planned phase out of gasoline powered vehicles in the state by maybe 2035. Maybe they're going to change the date. I don't know. Maybe they cannot do that because it's linked with California, with some possible benchmarks and caveats. So you and I are all going to get together over the next couple of weeks. We'll have people on here who know from when this is happening. And look, they're going to have to sell us on this. They're not, because if they don't, and just take a look at what happened in Chicago today. We'll get to that later with all the EVs in Chicago. In this brutal weather, you got a bunch of expensive paperweights now around Chicago. If they don't do that sufficiently to my liking and to your liking, guess what we're going to say again? No. All right, we'll get back to open phones a little bit later in the hour. When we do, of course, it'll be at 203-333 9422-333-WICC. We'll get back to the possibility of lowering the blood alcohol level in Connecticut to for a legal DUI. And the phase-out of gasoline-powered vehicles, those are the two big stories statewide today. But welcoming back one of our go-to people when it comes to all things politics to take a look at what happened, what didn't happen with the Iowa caucuses, Professor Alan Sanders, attorney, former Time Magazine senior reporter, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey, joins us. Professor, it's Paul again. Sir, how are you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
So, Donald Trump wins. I don't think anybody, Professor, is surprised at that. The polls were just about right on. They were only off by about a half or 1 point, depending on the polls. So where does this race stand after yesterday's contest, which admittedly was a very low turnout contest? What are your thoughts here?
Well, that's right. And I think when we're looking at the early contest, particularly places like Iowa, you're really looking about expectations. Did the candidates meet the expectations that were set out for them and that were predicted for them? And certainly Donald Trump met all of the expectations and then some. So he comes out of Iowa going very strong. For DeSantis and for Haley, they didn't really quite meet the expectations. They came in second and third, but far behind Donald Trump. So the question really is what can they do in terms of their campaign, but it really boils down to things like donors and whether there's momentum. But there's another point here that's very important, and I think you pointed it out, Paul. And that is there was a low turnout. We're making all kinds of predictions on the basis of 110,000 people,
yes,
something like that, who came out in Iowa. And that's a small number of people to begin with. And moreover, it's only about 15% of all registered Republicans in Iowa. So although we're making all kinds of reading tea leaves and making all kinds of predictions, there's still room for a lot of movement in the race. Nonetheless, what really is clear is that Donald Trump really has the MAGA base in his pocket. They do come out for him, and he comes out of it with a lot of momentum.
And yes, Professor, half of the Republicans that voted, virtually half, 48-49%, chose to vote against him. Now, Mr. Ramaswamy has dropped out of the race. A lot of his support probably will go to Trump. But, yeah, I think you're right. One thing that we're missing here, I thought, was that it was a low turnout, no matter how cold it was. And, yes, Mr. Trump is at 50 or 51 or 52%, but that means about 48%, at least this time around, said no.
That's right. And that suggests that if he were to win the nomination, and of course all the predictions are that he will, but we'll have to wait and see, if he were to win the nominations, he clearly is not in control of the entire Republican Party. And so in a general election lineup against presumably Joe Biden, the question will arise, where will these anti-Trump Republicans go? And what about independents? Where will they go? So we still have a lot of races to go through and a lot of ups and downs in the race. Plus, of course, let's not forget that Donald Trump faces legal issues that may come to a head before the general election. So there's a lot of imponderables that are still ahead. And as you point out, although you win, there's a considerable number of people who vote against you. And that's true for any candidate, including Donald Trump. So there's still room for surprises and maneuverings as we head into the general election. This is just the beginning.
Sure.
So, again, lots of tea leaf reading, but on the basis of very small results so far.
Professor Emeritus Alan Sanders, one of our political analysts, former Time Magazine senior reporter, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. And, Professor, now we look at New Hampshire coming up next week, and I just saw one of the polls. It was a CNN poll. Yes, Mr. Trump is out front 39%. Nikki Haley's at 32%. Chris Christie, who now has dropped out, is at 12%, and then on down. So this looks to be much tighter. Do you see a perceptive different dynamic, Professor, between Iowa and the base there versus what we'll encounter in a little less than a week now in New Hampshire? What's the difference, do you think?
Well, the difference really is that the New Hampshire electorate, even the Republican electorate, is much more moderate than the Republican electorate in Iowa. And so what we should be watching for is who does Nikki Haley, who does she attract? Of course, she will attract some traditional Republicans, but will she manage to attract a large number of independents and also some Democrats? You're allowed to switch over in New Hampshire. So that will tell us not necessarily the fate of, Ms. Haley's candidacy, but what it will tell us is, are there a lot of people who are willing to vote against Trump among independents and certainly among Democrats, and are they willing to come out? So this will tell us a little bit more about the general electorate, but it may not tell us much more than that, depending on the results. But nonetheless, it's something worth watching for. How weak is Donald Trump among a broader swath of voters beyond the MAGA base? That will be really what to watch for.
And apparently that's the sense I get, Professor, that the broader the base, it kind of dilutes the former president's appeal in the GOP.
Well, that's right. What a lot of people forget is that, of course, the MAGA base is Trump all the way, and they're quite motivated, and they come out. But what people always forget to take into account is there are a lot of anti-Trump voters who are just as motivated to vote against Donald Trump whenever he's on the ballot. So what we really need to figure out is who's more motivated and who has the greater numbers, the pro-Trump people or the anti-Trump people. And I think New Hampshire will give us a little bit more of a glimpse on that, and that will really be the significance of New Hampshire, I think.
What happened, Professor, and I've had a couple of people discuss this with me over the past couple of days, and I know he's technically still in the race. What happened with Ron DeSantis? Here's a guy who won a red state by 20 points. You can disagree with his policy, but here's a guy who was in the JAG Corps, Yale undergrad, Harvard Law School grad. Anytime you throw a question at him, he understands the question. He regurgitates it back. You know, somebody a couple of days ago said that, you know, there may be technocrat substance there, but he doesn't connect with people. You see that? What do you attribute the fact that Governor DeSantis has spent something like $160 million for not much so far?
Yeah. Well, I think the basic problem, I mean, we could talk about his personality and so forth, that's certainly an element. But I think the more important component here that has led to disappointing results for him is that it was the wrong strategy to undertake. He decided to out-Trump Trump and to be more Trump than Trump himself. What he didn't calculate is that the Trump brand is very strong, and out-Trumping Trump doesn't get the Trump voters out of Trump. So it doesn't attract the Trump voters because they're committed to their brand, and out-Trumping Trump doesn't get you any broader segment of the Republican electorate. And so I think it was a misfired strategy. I think it would have been a stronger candidacy. I'm not suggesting it would be successful, but it would have been a stronger candidacy if he actually challenged Trump and pointed out the differences between him and Trump and perhaps pursued a more moderate course of politics, because you can't out-Trump Trump. The Trump brand is really baked in, and trying to outdo Trump on his own turf simply does not work, and he should have been aware of that long ago, but I guess he's learning it the hard way now.
Yeah. Finally, Professor, a couple of stories I'm looking at here on my computer. One of the New York Post, David Axelrod warns Biden campaign to, quote unquote, get in gear after Trump's Iowa win. And in Politico.com, Simone Sanders pans the Bidenomics message. Of course, she's well ensconced in Democratic politics for people who don't know her. Thoughts on that? Do you think, Professor, in any stretch right now, one day after Iowa, should there be any amount of worry inside the White House, or is it too early yet?
Well, I think there should be concern. The polls certainly don't look good for Joe Biden, so I think surely you should be concerned. The polls don't necessarily predict what people will actually do. They do tell you what people think at the time of the polling, but it doesn't necessarily translate in what they would do. So the way people think, they're not satisfied with Joe Biden, and they have issues about the economy and about a whole number of other issues. So I think it's always important to talk about the economy. I would never not talk about the economy as a candidate because people care about that fundamentally. And so Joe Biden needs to talk about how the economy is better, but not perfect. But that shouldn't be the only thing he talks about. There are lots of issues that people are concerned about, crime, immigration, democracy, the culture wars, and so forth, and abortion. What's really interesting about the issues that people are concerned about, and I've just named some of the top ones, there are many others, is that you don't know which way they're going to cut. Certainly when you're talking about immigration and crime, that activates Republican voters. When you're talking about democracy and abortion and the culture wars, that motivates a lot of Democrats. So there are a lot of cross currents here about the issues that people care about. What you need to do is talk about the issues that motivate your voters, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, and you know, argue for a large turnout based on those motivating issues. So I do think it's time for Biden to become more aggressive in his campaign. He's already started to do that, by the way. He gave two speeches that were quite partisan. But, you know, you want to stay president as long as possible because that gets you a certain amount of goodwill. But there comes a point where you have to turn into a partisan campaigner. And Biden has started to do that. And I think it is time to do that if you want to run a successful election campaign.
Professor Alan Sanders, attorney, former Time Magazine senior reporter, professor emeritus political science at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. Professor, always good to chat with you. We'll chat to down the road, sir. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Paul.
Appreciate it, Professor Alan Sanders there. Hope you're okay if you're leaving work or heading somewhere tonight. Be careful. Lots of eyes, as my people like to say, lots of eyes out there. Watch the eyes. Don't slip or fall on you while you're wearing there. 203-333-9422. 203-333-WICC. Back to open phones. In just a bit, Megan Portfolio is here. She, of course, writes the blog, The Hartford Portfolio. Check that out at the Yankee Institute website. Megan, hi. How are you? How have you been? What is up with you?
Oh, I'm just sitting here not looking forward to getting the ice off of my sidewalk.
You and me both.
So if you wanted to keep me on for the rest of the show, I would not be opposed to it. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but the ice is not going to go away, Megan, by itself. You've got to do something. Come on.
Oh, come on, man.
I'm sorry. I'm killing. What are you telling me? I'm killing the vibe here anyway. Speaking, Megan, speaking of killing the vibe and several vibes, what are you focusing on this week? I guess we have some issues here, more than one, involving automobiles in the state and taxes and all that. So what's going on?
Oh, so I didn't know if you knew this, but since 1908, people that have owned cars in this state have had to pay a car tax. And it's been driving people crazy since 1908.
I didn't know it went back that far.
Yeah.
I learned something. Wow, I didn't know that.
And it's been as unpopular today as it was back in the old, mm-hmm. oldie times.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
old timeies. Mm-hmm. In the past couple of decades, they've been trying to get rid of it. And it seems like they're actually taking a serious attempt. Like they created a task force at the end of last session. They actually wanted to get rid of it last session, but they had some weird scheme where they to pay for it. They wanted to have a fee for landlords and then tax revenue on our insurance policies, which then would, you know, trickle down to us. Mm-hmm. You know, the insurance companies aren't pay for it. So then because it was so ridiculous, they're like, all right, let's do a task force and really look at this thing. But so far, I've not been impressed. It's the typical, like, lazy, like, lawmaking. The, oh, well, let's just tax the rich to pay for that. And it's like, well, every one of your schemes that you guys come up with, all I hear is, oh, well, let's just tax the rich. And coincidentally, I'm staring at census data for an article I'm writing. And since 2020, the Northeast, like, the highest tax region in the country, we've yeah. lost like 630,000 people.
It's a lot of people.
And they're all going to the South. The South is like booming, coincidentally, lower taxes. So this is one of the things that they're floating. And it's just lazy, Paul. It's just infuriating. And then one of the task members, the mayor, this mayor of Middletown,
yeah,
and he's asked the simple question, how much does your city bring in the car tax? He's like, oh, gee, I wish I knew that. Like, dude, you don't even, like,
how do you not
that's
know
like
that?
Asking yeah. me, like, yeah. how much yeah. do you get paid? Like, you should know where your money's coming from.
And Megan, like I've said, and obviously you'd agree with this. Listen, taxing property, now a house, a home, an apartment building, a condo, a townhouse, location, location, location. You and I both know, and anybody with a brain knows, that the same house in Greenwich versus Fairfield versus New Haven versus Farmington. There's going to be a difference in value there because of the location. You know, that's a big thing in commercial and residential real estate. But my 2019 Hyundai Elantra should not be taxed at any different rate, if you're going to tax it at all, depending upon whether it's parked here in Wallingford or in New Haven or in Bridgeport or in Greenwich. The value of a vehicle should not change. This is maddening.
It's so maddening that they have been doing this for like 100 years. Like, why? Like, I'm just talking about like my neck of the woods, you know, Middlesex, Hartford County. Like, why do these people in Hartford have to pay so much more for the same exact car that's parked in a driveway in another zip code? It's absolutely ridiculous.
But the problem, Megan, is, and let's look at this from a cold reality here. What's the figure I saw? $1.8 billion statewide for the 169 municipalities. That's what, if you take it in total, we'd have to make up here. And that's money that kind of doesn't go through the state, Megan. You and I both know that that stays locally to pay for cops and firefighters and road crews and trash pickups. So, frankly, Megan, I don't know what the answer is to this. I've talked about this on my show a dozen times in the past year, and I have no idea how to fix this. Now, I want to get rid of the tax, but it all comes back, and you see the same thing I do, right? The city and town leaders and CCM and Council of Governments, they all say, okay, well, how do we get made whole from the money we're going to lose?
Yeah, and to that point, and take it a step further, these poor municipalities, how many years have gone by where the state promises to give them this money, for, like, you know, the payment in lieu of taxes, the pilot program? They promise to give them the money, and then they renege on it. Like, it happens over and over again, so I don't blame the towns for being apprehensive about this. But you're right, it needs to be made up somewhere. But just to throw out, these silly ideas, it's lazy and it's offensive. Fortunately, I got to give it to Mark Boughton, who's the commissioner of DRS. Mm-hmm. He's at least like, guys, you know, there could be like a dozen implications that happen if you just get rid of this tax. Like, we need to, like, sit back and look at this. What does it look like? Like, is it raising our income taxes? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, what does that look like? If you're going to raise our income tax, am I going to be paying more than I would have just paid for the car tax? So at least he's like saying, like, guys, we need to really, like, look at this and analyze it. Look at what the other states are doing. Look at the other states around us. Per statute, they're required to have a report to the General Assembly this February. So, I mean, I'm going to keep watching it, but, I mean, God only knows what they're going to submit in. I hope that they take Commissioner Boughton's suggestion and be like, let's take a step back. Let's look at this. Let's get it done right. Get something that, you know, we can get to the legislature that's going to add value to the taxpayers. And just do it correctly. And stop, like, just throwing anything at the wall to let it stick. I'm, like, so sick of it.
Yeah, and Megan, anything they do from a base level here has to be equal statewide, meaning it has to divorce itself, I think, from the notion that a car in town A is taxed at a different rate than a car than that same car in town B. And unfortunately, you're right, there's no easy way out of this. Maybe it is doing something with the income tax. Maybe it is doing something with, you know, taxation on, I hate to say it because it's getting more and more expensive, but, you know, auto insurance. Or, you know, maybe, but, you know, perish the thought, maybe, like I've always said, nobody wants to go near, for example, the state sales tax. That's kind of taboo. Do we add a 0.5% or 1% to that? I think people would much rather personally pay a higher sales tax than have to fork out, you know, $400, $500, $600 a year like I do is the tax on my car. But, you know, like, it's like a needle, Megan, to get an inoculation. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt.
Oh, it's going to hurt. If they just do it this quick, you know, it's an election year. Oh, let's get rid of the car tax. Like, guys, let's be smart for once. Like, let's stop, you know, let's forget it's an election year. Let's do it correctly. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the ideas was a local sales tax. Now, I'm not sure I'm a fan of that. I haven't really looked into it yet. But, I mean, you know, every time you add these little stupid taxes, you know, small businesses really don't have, you know, they don't have an accountants that work for them, like, you know, a small coffee shop or restaurant. And that just adds more of a burden to them. Another idea So I think it was CCM put it up. It's like, well, how about the hotel tax? Maybe reconfigure the calculation of how much goes back to the town or increase the hotel tax. But, you know, there are some decent ideas that, but they deserve to be like vetted out, not just like, oh, let's just do this because it's an election year and I want to look good and, you know, keep my power.
Absolutely. Megan Portfolio. Megan, thank you. Check out her stuff at the Yankee Institute, the Hartford Portfolio. Megan, thanks. And we'll chat next week. Thank you.
Have a good week. Bye.
All right. Thanks. Megan Portfolio there.